There's always something in the background, whether it be a Chinook flying over our heads or someone, I think it was a chainsaw last year, maybe dismembering something out the back, a tree, hopefully. It's lunchtime, well into lunchtime. We're filled with quiche and chicken drumsticks and unusual cheeses. Who do we have sitting around Orwell's grave?
Little Purple Goth.
At Christian Hambley.
Soul Cruiser.
Lucy Touchstone.
Sorry, I apologise as I step over this grave.
125 F8.
Hedgewidge.
John Perivalaris.
David Charles.
Is that your Twitter name as well?
DC is busy, I think. I'm not a very good Twitter person.
David, I believe you are the first person... Sorry, you are the only person who is here for the first time.
Correct.
How does it feel?
Pretty good, yeah. I'd like to make clear it's the first time I've been here on his birthday at the symposium.
Yes.
But I did make the pilgrimage here from where I grew up in Cholsey, a 16-mile walk along the Thames about 8 years ago now.
Is that a done thing, or was that just something you wanted to do at the time?
It was just something I wanted to do at the time.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do for a living, but also for fun.
I'm a writer. I think that's more for fun than for a living, but that's just writing, as I'm sure George would vouch for. at the moment I'm doing a lot of writing about migration, particularly I've been teaching English in Calais, so I've been writing a lot about the camp situations there, which is terrible. It's basically a huge humanitarian disaster happening about 30 miles away on the other side of the channel. In July I'm going to trace back the migration route to Turkey and find out more about why these people are coming and what advice they would pass on to people further down the migration trail.
And what brings you here today?
You!
Dragged in a leash.
I love George Orwell's writing. Recently finished reading a biography. Met you guys at Elevate and your sound.
The Elevate Festival. It was a lot of fun, which is coming up actually in a few months' time. It's in Austria, Graz, elevate.at. There's a plug for definitely one of my favourite festivals.
Yeah.
You wrote a book at the festival, didn't you?
I did. I've done two.
Two. And released it the following year at the festival. It was given away?
Yeah, it was. So hopefully, last year's one will be given away at this one.
Am I in it?
Yeah, of course you are.
I'll put me down for one copy. What brings you here?
Apart from just having a mouthful of food.
Yeah.
As I said to David when I met him in the car park, I'm a repeat offender. I find it quite a useful pause in the year, just to kind of like refocus and remember that I'm quite interested in how we can live our lives openly, but with some privacy.
Nice. It's almost like you thought that through beforehand.
Hello.
Christian, what brings you here?
It's my first visit.
Oh, it is your first visit? Your first visit? Why? It's because I've seen you so many times.
I know, I've been trying to come for years, but this is actually my first time I've ever made it.
Was there a flurry of apologies from you last year? It felt like you were here.
Absolutely. I'm always here in spirit, just never been here in person. So,
Oh, good. And you came on a motorbike? What? Scooter?
I came on a 1989... faux pas, should have been a 1984 Honda C90 step through. 45 mile an hour the whole way from Milton Keynes.
Stuff of legend. Yeah. Three drips and it's a full tank.
Absolutely. Got my petrol can in the top just to make sure I don't run out of fuel. And gave her a clean yesterday, especially polished. It's fabulous.
Any personal connection, interest or otherwise, with Orwell?
More of a personal connection with the group here, actually. Orwell, not overly. I was the typical, read a number of his books at school, had no real interest when I was at school, but enjoyed the writing. And it's more about the connection to the group and opening my eyes and not just staring at a screen, Googling stuff all day and spending a lot of money because of you.
Oh, yeah. We had a bit of a geek out with the tech and the paraphernalia that is currently around the grave right now. Another frequent flyer.
Absolutely. And I always end up buying something new as well after I come from here.
It's not what it's about.
Yeah, I come because I'm a fan of Orwell's and I like the discussion that we have here. And it's great being outdoors in the open with a group of people having lunch and talking about things that matter.
Gordon.
I knew you were going to ask me as well. second or third time, I've lost track now. But it's just, it's a great group of people to meet up with and just see exactly how people are thinking and what they're doing now.
Well, I'm here because I get free chicken wings and an offer of olives, even though I hate them. And the other reason is I'm interested in structures and behaviour, and I'm interested in George Orwell too.
Money is your big thing, isn't it?
It's quite a big thing. Yeah, I've been researching it for probably 7-8 years.
And the HSBC cap you're wearing, had to bring that up.
Is a mistake.
He reaches into his bag and I'm like, what is going on there? Because you're into, you know, I guess exposing, if nothing else in conversation, kind of the illusion around our financial systems.
Well, it's a bit about that. There's a lot of things discussed and things said, which are really myths. And there is no secret, there is no conspiracy. It's just the nature of the system. But the money system is wonky, to say the least.
Wonky.
It's a technical term.
I'll wait for the fuller article, but we were discussing a little bit about blockchain earlier on. But you were talking about systems of finance which were shut down way before things like Bitcoin.
Well, yes, there have been lots, though. I mean, the one I think I was talking about was Invergal in 1934, I think it was, where they issued their own, basically their own money, and they spent it into existence instead of lending it. And it was at the time of the Great Depression, and basically they ended up getting, you know, full employment, built great infrastructure projects, including a bridge. But unfortunately, the banking fraternity found out and in the end took them to court and shut them down.
Bit of history I need to polish up on, obviously. I'm getting away from mysterious person that if you did listen back to Who's Here, you'll guess who it might be. Where photographs being taken of Eric Arthur Blair, or at least his headstone. It would be quite disturbing if we had actually got him out. A regular every year, albeit 1 year remotely, streaming in from Orwell's house on the Isle of Jura, Dr. John Perivaralis.
Hello, Christian. Hello again. I'm relaxing with my back leaning against the grave of Eric Arthur Blair, and it's nice and warm, and I'm feeling inspiring vibrations up my spine.
As he rolls continuously.
As he rolls and spins, yes.
Would he be rolling and spinning right now? Or do you think he's tired of rolling and spinning? Because let's remember, this is 8 years, isn't it?
8 years indeed.
That, yes, we've been coming.
And the rose bush by his grave has grown a great deal. It's sort of towering over his grave now, shadowing it from the sun, yes.
So,
and I know somebody has actually, I don't know if it was you, Christian, but somebody has left flowers by the grave.
They were here when we came here, I think, because we came around 11. There's always some kind of small offering. It's been pages from the book 1984 before. That's 1984 written out, unlike the crass hashtag that we have for today's event, number 1984 symposium, if you are following. But there's always been something. Remember, we found a little charm hanging in the bushes. That's once, right, with a tiny, tiny microscopic pencil almost suspended in it.
Mm. Which is resonates greatly. I mean, thank you for reminding me of the pencil, because I was in Paris in January after the Charlie Hebdo attacks, and the symbol... Well, you found pencils all over Paris that people were leaving on the pavements and at different monuments. So
we were discussing earlier on what George Orwell may have thought about Charlie Hebdo and everything that's been going on around that. And you were finding it hard to come up with a conclusion.
Yes, especially hard, since I noticed that the cover of Charlie Hebdo today is a picture of the IMF drowning a Greek, and it says, "Save Europe, drown a Greek."
The pendulum keeps swinging. Crazy time. So, I don't know what's going to.
So, I don't know what Orwell would have thought actually of Charlie Hebdo themselves, the sort of no holds barred, nothing is sacred. I have my doubts actually about Orwell himself, whether he was so sort of libertarian. I don't know, it's an open question.
Mm. Of which maybe we can discuss more so later. We often talk about data. We often talk about privacy. We often talk about our behaviours and how we interact with the world around us, and how, in many ways, we've talked. Well, from the very beginning, we were talking about it was initially surveillance.
And transparency and all of that, yes.
That was, to us, the most visible threat on our personal space, and how things have changed over the last 8 years.
Mm. Yes, and now it's often the most conservative parts of society that espouse that idea of the free flow of everything, of course, apart from migrants, of course. But when, you know, now with the recent debates on privacy, for example, you know, people are less certain, and I think we're coming back more and more to sort of Orwell's view, actually, or the need actually for some sort of credible authority or control. You know, I don't think Orwell was, even though he fought with the anarchists in Spain, was actually a complete anarchist. I mean, the anarchists themselves were not. I think we see with much of capitalism, actually, what happens when you don't have a government, you don't have a state anymore as the sort of highest control on these flows. So, yeah.
What have you seen? I'm going to step over here to you. He looks over his shoulder. What's happening at the moment in Cali?
So, at the moment, there's about between 3,000 and 4,000... mostly men living in what's essentially a large area of waste ground just outside Calais, underneath, sort of overlooked by a huge flyover from where the police and riot cops can surveil the whole area. last week, whilst I was there, the government very kindly put in 20 portaloos, which they clean out every couple of days or so. So, yeah, 20 for 3,000, 3,500 people. It's not very many. They also put in some water taps, some drinking water taps, so that migrants no longer had to walk about 15 minutes through to the only three taps that there were before that. And that all just happened last week whilst I was there. And essentially, it's kind of a humanitarian crisis. And the French government is now responding. Basically, the last sort of year or so, they've been trying to freeze out the migrants, not giving them anything, sort of under pressure from the UK government, who don't want to encourage people to go to Calais. So now the French government are saying, OK, we're going to invest €500,000 into the camp and provide proper drinking water, proper food. At the moment, they're only getting one meal a day, and most of them don't even get that provided.
Sounds like a far cry from the utopia they were heading towards.
Well, I mean,
I say obviously tongue in cheek, because
where
do they believe?
No, I appreciate that
they are going as well.
Yeah, it's very difficult because you hear all these stories about the lives that these people are fleeing, and they are horrific.
So we're talking, like, there's a huge number of Syrian refugees fleeing for countless, you know, obvious reasons, just the death and destruction and the chaos and the collapse in infrastructure, everything that's going on at the moment in a still war-torn country. The regime itself is enough to want to flee from, or at least was before we started making friends again, it seems. Yeah. The UK have taken it's a very, very tiny, tiny proportion of those refugees compared to people like Germany. That's right.
Yeah, yeah, that's absolutely right. I think the British said they'd take 500 very generously, and they haven't. The last I heard, they'd taken about 150, which
Whereas
is amazing.
Tens of thousands have gone elsewhere.
Yeah, Germany have taken 40 or 50,000 alone. They're the most sort of generous, as their, you know, their economy would dictate.
And you've had a chance to speak to many of these, have you? Because you're teaching them English.
Mm. So actually, in Calais, there's in the camp, there's overwhelmingly the majority are from Sudan, from Darfur, which is kind of the forgotten conflict. I mean, that was 2003 that all started getting really genocidal, and so now these people. There's still a war in Darfur. It's still going on.
There's a T-shirt right there.
yeah. So I was mostly teaching people from Darfur, just because of where I was in the camp. A lot of the Syrians do get the support that they need, to a certain extent, compared to Africans, Eritreans, Ethiopians, and Sudanese. So, yeah, I mean, I was teaching an English lesson and this guy started telling me his story, which I thought, oh, great, this is a brilliant opportunity to practice the past tense. And then sort of his first thing was like, it started in 2003 when the militia shooted my grandfather in front of me. I was like, do I correct that? Or it's suddenly just a really insensitive English lesson all of a sudden, so I just let him talk. But yeah, I mean...
Dark times, dark
yeah, yeah,
continuing.
His family's dead, all his friends are shot in Libya, and yeah, and now he's in Calais. He just wanted to leave to become an engineer, but he was telling me that now he's going to go into law if he can.
If other people wanted to volunteer in that particular area, what kind of steps do they have to take?
Just go to Calais.
Really?
It's as simple as that, yeah. At the moment, so
they're not expecting a migration from the other direction.
No, exactly. Exactly. No, if as long as you've got a passport, you're fine. Yeah. Treated like royalty. But so part of the £500,000 investment from the French government, part of that will involve the whole site being administered by a charity, which has the risk of making the camp effectively an open-air prison. So at the moment, there's a very small area for women and children, which is completely closed off to people like me and ordinarily to journalists. You need to, you know, ask permission to go in. So they could make that entire camp closed down, basically. They've put up fences on the motorway and everywhere. It's possible. So basically, I'd suggest go now, go and see for yourself right now, go and speak to people and share your stories with them before it's potentially too late.
And give me a shout next time you're heading down, you know, maybe
next Friday.
Oh, give me a bit of notice.
Where can people find more information? You're writing about this at the moment.
So there's I've been publishing a few stories on davidcharles.info, and yeah, I mean, there's so many stories coming out at the moment. Just recently there was the strike that happened in the ferry port, and so that causes a huge backlog of lorries, and when there's a traffic jam or a backlog for some reason, that's when migrants can get into the back of lorries, and so a number of them I know made it across to England in the last couple of days because of that.
What's your personal feeling when that happens? Because the papers are filled with fear and they're crawling in the exhaust pipes. Yeah. And
I mean, it's very difficult when you're teaching English to a group of people. It's a hopeful activity. It's, I have a future, I'm going to carry on learning, and I just want knowledge and I want English inside me so that I can make something of my future. So on a personal level, these people making a success of their lives is fantastic. And if they believe that their best chance is to come to England, then who the hell am I to stop them or to tell them that they can't do that? When if I think that my best chance for my future is to go to Sudan, no one's going to stop me. It's unjust.
Thanks for sharing.
Oh, no worries.
We've had a couple of new attendees, Tony Gosling being one. You may know him from Bilderberg.org, a journalist based in Bristol, who came last year as well. Conversation is a hubbub in the background. Typically, the chainsawing appears to have stopped now for a moment. So I'm going to continue to chat, to share people arriving with flowers for the graves around Orwell's, as well as some people just coming to pay their respects, totally unconnected to the 1984 symposium. It's an absolutely lovely day, and it feels really good to be able to share these moments with a select number of people who have made a big effort to come here from all over the UK, it seems, and further afield. Thanks for listening. Hashtags 1984 symposium.